The Dr. Peter Bregan Hour, Mondays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, and Medication Madness? It's the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with guests and callers seeking the truth about psychiatry and psychotherapy and how you can make the most of your own life right here on the Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Dr. Peter Bregan, and welcome to the Conscience of Psychiatry. Today, I'll be really talking about my work in that regard. I'm not going to have a guest. Instead, I'm going to share with you some of my experiences in regard to the legal system, in terms, in particular, of people who have been driven over the edge by psychiatric drugs, often driven to psychosis, or to violence, or to suicide, and sometimes to simply outlandish, irrational crimes that never would have been committed by them in their right mind. To begin with, let me warn you that any psychoactive substance can probably make a person crazy. I say probably because there are too many psychoactive substances for me to have looked at every one of them on the face of the earth, and new ones are constantly turning up. They're found in plants and flowers, and they're manufactured in laboratories. But if we look at the usual drugs that people use in the real world, marijuana and alcohol probably being among the most common, we know that both of those drugs, for some people, lead to violence, lead to depression and suicidality, lead to they're doing things that they never under ordinary circumstances would have done. In regard to marijuana, I learned clinically decades ago in my practice that it is a drug that's sometimes associated with a first break of psychosis, which then gets often mistaken for or misdiagnosed as schizophrenia, which then leads to a terrible outcome in terms of being diagnosed incorrectly and being treated incorrectly and being stigmatized. Smoking marijuana, of course, in the long run for people produces some cognitive problems, memory problems, but also a loss of motivation and of caring and of involvement and engagement. Alcohol has myriad problems associated with it. There's some indicators that most of the violence committed in society, maybe 50% or more, has an association with alcohol, particularly domestic violence, violence among friends, violence in bars and at parties and at universities. Alcohol is a big problem with people becoming depressed and a big problem with suicidality, and alcohol is often mixed with other drugs and committing suicide. So what's going on in terms of psychoactive substances before we even begin to look at the antidepressants, which will be the beginning focus of my talk today with you, my engagement with you today, which I hope, by the way, will be a positive one, because I'm not just going to look at the gloom and doom. There's a goodness in just getting the word out about these drugs so that people will be more cautious about using them, so that folks will and their families will recognize the problem when drugs are affecting their loved ones. And you're going to see, as I tell you some stories from my own experiences, that the courts are more and more recognizing that psychiatric drugs can cause all kinds of negative and harmful reactions, including violence and suicide. But returning to my observation that any psychoactive substance can lead to a bad emotional behavioral outcome, you ask why? Well, it's not real complicated. All psychoactive substances work by disrupting higher brain function. That's what makes them psychoactive. They're psychoactive because they disrupt higher brain function. Alcohol, marijuana, LSD, methamphetamine, mushrooms, these drugs don't work by making people's brains function better. In fact, we don't have any interventions that make the human brain function better. We actually don't have any that we can prove improve brain function or correct biochemical imbalances. All psychoactive substances work by causing a biochemical imbalance, a biochemical disruption. In fact, if you're trying to develop a new psychiatric drug, you test animals to see if your chemicals will disrupt their brain function. We got no way of testing to see if it improves it. So when Prozac was developed, it didn't improve serotonergic neurotransmission, as the drug company falsely tried to claim. No, it caused an impairment in serotonin neurotransmission in the brains of rats. It was the only way to discover it, to find it, was to see that it was causing a disruption. And then later it was claimed that, well, there may be something wrong in human brains that this disruption improves. Wholly speculative, unfounded, and basically nonsensical claim. Now, two legal cases recently have given us real hope that the courts, and hence society, is really beginning to recognize the most extreme dangers of psychiatric drugs, which are psychosis, violence, and suicide. You know, totally losing it, totally going over the edge into psychosis, and going over the edge into horrible violence or suicide. The first case I'm going to tell you about is out of New Mexico, and it's just recently hit the news. A $3 million verdict in New Mexico in the case of Susan Silva, S-I-L-V-A. And this involves Paxil. The second case I'm going to talk to you about involves Prozac. Both of these are so-called SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Forget the fancy language. They're supposed to stop or slow down the removal of the neurotransmitter serotonin from its active place in the synapses. In other words, it's a stopper on getting rid of the drug out of your system and its effects out of your system. It's to get the serotonin out of your system, and that's supposed to be good for you. Well, it's not. Why would it be good to flood your system with a neurotransmitter? And we'll see. We get time to talk about it. The brain, in fact, doesn't like this kind of intrusion, doesn't like having the removal of serotonin stopped, and it tries to compensate and often overcompensates for this. The case in New Mexico, I was originally involved in as a consultant. I didn't go on to participate in the trial, I think in part because it was such horrendous malpractice resulting in a over $3 million verdict, that they didn't need me to come in as the expert in the field, as the international expert. They could get local folks. But I did participate in the initial evaluation of the case and found that there was indeed the malpractice, that the case should be pursued. I was involved as a consultant in that early part of the process, and I provided lots of materials. You know, I'm a storehouse of materials on Paxil to the attorneys, and I congratulate them on their success in winning this malpractice suit. They also brought a product liability suit, which was turned down by the judge, in which that's being appealed. But it's very clear that there was malpractice in this case from my initial review, and clearly other experts came to the same conclusion. In this case, the woman became grossly psychotic Their behavior was grossly disturbed. She went into withdrawal whenever she stopped the drug. That was missed. Paxil will cause withdrawal if you just miss a dose. And that makes you think you're really crazy because you can't live without your Paxil. That was missed. And her degree of disturbance was missed. And she ended up killing herself with razor blades in a most terrible fashion. I won't try to describe the pictures to you in a most terrible fashion. And that is typical of these drugs. We have a study out of Maryland from the Maryland Coroner's Office showing that people who suicide on antidepressants like Paxil, the newer antidepressants, Prozac, really all the newer ones, that their suicides are more violent, and that even women who ordinarily don't violently destroy themselves will do it in a violent way. So that's the first case I wanted to tell you about. This one out of New Mexico, malpractice case, jury verdict in the case of Susan Silva for $3 million. This is not the first such case, but it's a good thing for the community, for the legal system, to continue to recognize the severity of the problem of driving people crazy and driving them over the brink into suicide from psychiatric drugs. And again, while I'm emphasizing the newer antidepressants, all the psychiatric drugs can drive a person at times over the edge, and most of them to violence or suicide at one time or another. But recent studies have confirmed, looking at the FDA's materials, recent studies have confirmed that the SSRIs are among the most egregious in producing these bizarre and destructive behaviors. The second suit, I not only was involved as the initial consultant in the suit, but I went on to be the single expert in the suit. And this is the case that I mentioned briefly last week that you can find on my website and also on my Huffington Post blog. And this is a Canadian case of a 16-year-old boy who got mildly depressed. His family didn't notice it, but he asked his mom if she would take him to the doc. And his primary care doc in Canada is in Winnipeg. You can also Google some of the Canadian coverage on this, but you'll find it more directly just by going to Bregan.com, my website, and clicking on the headline up top or one of the other links on the front page to this case. And you'll be able to find, by the way, you'll find the judge's opinion that's now up. So you can find the judge's opinion on my website. And in this case, the young boy was put on Prozac, and within a very short period of time, a little more than a week, he attempted suicide for the first time in his life. Red flag. Red flag. There's warnings about suicide in children and youth and young adults up to age 24 in the FDA. It should be really all ages. And in fact, the Canadian Drug Monitoring Agency, Health Canada, has a warning that this drug can produce harm to self and others at any age. There's no age restriction. In this case, Health Canada is more accurate and more honest than the FDA, which doesn't push as much. It mentions the drug can cause aggression and hostility, but it doesn't come out and give a flat-out warning about harm to self and others in all age groups. Now, the primary care doc had good sense. Didn't have good sense, I think, in originally prescribing the medication to a 16-year-old, because Health Canada warns about that, says it's not authorized. But he had the good sense when he saw the suicide attempt to refer the young man and the parents to a psychiatrist. Unfortunately, the clinic that he was referred to, the psychiatrist continued the Prozac, even though the note from the doc, the referral note, you know, contains a question mark about the Prozac and its effects, and the mother gave specific warnings about her son getting worse on Prozac. They continued it. And the boy would eventually remain on it for 3 months, during which time he got more and more agitated, more and more anxious, showed hypomanic and manic behavior. That is, he took risks, playing that he wouldn't ordinarily risk, getting hurt, jumping over things. He started to talk in a bizarre fashion about what would it be like if he killed somebody. He ran away from home. He actually cut himself. He really began to deteriorate. And if you look at the FDA warnings, which read very much like the scientific article that was made available to the FDA committee before it came up with these warnings, and the label reads very much like my earlier work extending back several years, and in particular a 2004 scientific article that I gave to them for their 2004 meetings, and that's all in there, that when you take these antidepressants, all the newer ones now, it includes Celexa and you know, Effexor and all the newer drugs pose these risks, the newer antidepressants. And it's all about agitation. It's all about anxiety. It's all about getting driven, having your nervous system revved up into agitation, into akathisia, which is a dreadful experience of inner torment that makes you want to move around, into impulsivity, into loss of self-control, and ultimately even into mania of a psychotic nature, as happened in the first case, in the Silva case. Well, 17 days before the event, which I haven't told you about yet, 17 days before the horrific event, the mother and the boy went to the doc, and the boy said, oh, he thought he was doing well on the drug. He wanted more. He wouldn't realize how bad the drug was affecting him until he was in jail and he eventually came off the drug because of what I call medication spellbinding. You can read about that in my book, Medication Madness. I've also written scientific articles about medication spellbinding. When the person is going through this experience, like when poor Susan Silva was becoming psychotic, or when this young patient in Canada, the 16-year-old, is getting more and more disturbed and agitated and anxious and upset and talking bizarrely about violence, the person doesn't realize how strange this is. The person doesn't realize that this is just a totally out of its state of mind. To give you a more minor analogy to that, the person who's drinking and driving often thinks they can drive better than ever and certainly doesn't realize that they're a menace to themselves and to other human beings and might kill somebody. And similarly, the man who comes home and beats his wife while he's drunk thinks for sure he's justified in what he's doing. He's not stopping to think, I never behave this way when I'm not drunk. I never behave this way when I'm not drunk. So the drugs, by impairing the highest functions of the brain, cause this medication spellbinding. And that was happening to the young man in Canada. So with him saying he liked the drug and his mother saying to the psychiatrist, no, it's making him worse, the psychiatrist increased the dose of medication, increased it 17 days before the horrific event. And in that event, the young man was out horsing around with some friends. He got a call from his little brother that two of his good friends had come by. They'd had an altercation. They wanted to take some crackers off from the kitchen, and the young boy didn't want them taking his crackers. They gave him a little shove. They didn't hurt him. Knocked over a chair. The chair had dented the floor. And now the boy's upset, you know. Mother's going to be upset. Dad's going to be upset. And so the 16-year-old comes home to reassure his brother that everything's going to be okay. And then he calls his two friends over. Remember, they're friends, and nothing tragic has happened. So they happily come over. They're sitting around smoking a cigarette in his garage. He's on lawn chairs. He's sitting to the left. He's got one friend to his right and then a friend to the right of him. And out of the blue, he pulls out a knife from under his sweater on the floor and he stabs his friend to death with one blow. Murders him. One blow. Horrific case. But a classic Prozac-driven violence. A classic Prozac-driven violence. Well, the young man who commits this horrific assault himself, you know, calls 911. I think he starts out, he tells maybe his little brother calls 911. He calls 911 back. He says that he'd done something. He readily admits he did it. He can't explain why he did it. At no point can he say why he did it. To one interview, he said, "I just had to do it." A compulsion that overwhelmed him from the smallest provocation. A person who had never committed violence before in his life, never been aggressive before in his life. When I entered a case, of course, he was in jail. And the young man had already himself asked to be taken off the medication. And I interviewed his counselor in jail, who said, first of all, what a change in his behavior. He became, once he stopped the Prozac, he became more outgoing. He became a normal teenager. In fact, he said, the counselor, he's unlike anyone I've seen from my 20 years of experience, very experienced man in the jail system. He's not like any, you know, anyone I've seen that we have in the jail now. He doesn't seem to have any of the qualities of a perpetrator. None of the qualities of a perpetrator. And he felt that the explanation that the drug drove him to it made a lot of sense, because he couldn't think of any other reason why anyone like this young man from this good family would have done anything like this. He was just unlike all the other young men he'd seen who committed violence. And I was able to write a report for the judge in which I talked about this. I later interviewed the young man, and then I testified at a hearing. Now, the hearing was called for the basic purpose of deciding whether to sentence the young man as a juvenile or as an adult. Now, as a juvenile committing the crime at 16, he would have been serving no more than 4 years in jail. And indeed, he might get time served and be out of jail as a juvenile. But if he were sentenced as an adult, he could spend a great portion of his life in jail. The prosecution wanted him to, as most prosecutions do, to be tried as an adult and to go to jail for a good long time, because there was no question about him having committed the assault. The defense wanted the judge to sentence him as a juvenile, and to do so because this was not a crime of premeditation or of character flaw. This was a crime driven by Prozac. It wasn't even a crime of passion in the ordinary sense that there was an extreme provocation that drove the crime. This was a crime driven by Prozac and by improper treatment, which exposed him to Prozac and then increased the dose 17 days before the assault. Which is, by the way, what we see again and again is in these cases, is that docs don't get it, and instead of reducing the medication or stopping it, they increase the medication. And even where the doctor sometimes just starts the medication, we'll see horrendous crimes committed after one, two, or three doses. So it's very common if a few doses or a dose change. And I reported that to the FDA, and that is in the FDA label. Well, this past month, the judge had the hearing, and there were two expert witnesses. I'm not sure there were any other witnesses, but the prosecution, the Canadian prosecution, and had a psychiatrist, very experienced from local community, well-liked, respected apparently in local community. And indeed, I think he was the founder of the clinic. So we're talking about somebody with a strong interest in what was going on. And myself from the U.S. Well, the first good news was that for the second time in Canada, I was approved as an expert on psychiatric drugs. I've not been approved, but it was in Canada, but it was good news. It was good news. And the judge heard both of us. The psychiatrist for the prosecutions began, and I had spent a lot of time talking with Greg Brodsky, his terrific criminal lawyer in Manitoba. I'd spent a lot of time talking to him about the psychiatrist and about the issues in psychiatry. One of the things that I talked to him about was the psychiatrist had claimed in his report that he just couldn't trust what would happen to this boy, that whether therapy would help him or not, because he had trouble building rapport with him. Well, imagine the difficulty of building rapport with your prosecuting attorney's psychiatrist. I mean, think about it, folks. All of you listening to me out there, would you have trouble building rapport in jail when you're being interviewed by the psychiatrist for the people who want to put you away forever or as long as they can? And the point that I, in addition to that, that I made with Greg Brodsky was, hey, take a look at this issue, which is who's responsible for building rapport. In psychiatry, it's the psychiatrist. In psychotherapy, it's the therapist who's responsible for building rapport and for creating the conditions for building rapport. Although I can forgive the psychiatrist, he's certainly operating under a handicap trying to build rapport with somebody whom he's representing who wants to, do him serious harm. Serious harm, treating him like an adult criminal. Before the cross-exam by Mr. Brodsky was finished, the psychiatrist had to admit that, well, maybe. He certainly wouldn't have increased the Prozac. He would have either kept it the same or stopped it. It's clear that some of these symptoms he had were just like Prozac symptoms, but best he could say was he didn't think the Prozac made him do it. Didn't have real good reasons for why the Prozac wasn't what did it. But he was certainly left in a compromised position. I testified that this young man was driven to his violence by Prozac, that he was driven to it by Prozac, that it wouldn't have happened without Prozac, and it wasn't going to happen again now that he was off Prozac. And this past month, Judge Heinriches from Canada, again, you can read about the case and you can read his opinion on Bregan.com, evaluated the evidence and offered the opinion, gave the opinion that the boy's actions are explicable based on my opinion, that my opinion corresponded with the evidence. In fact, a quote from him is, corresponds with the evidence. That indeed, in other words, this boy committed the violence because of Prozac and wasn't going to commit it again. And furthermore, he said it was clear that the boy's ability to reason and control his conduct had been impaired by the Prozac. The judge, for the first time in North America, a judge totally came in agreement with a Prozac defense, the first time ever. And this was a classic case of Prozac-induced violence, but it is a great advance to have a judge come out and say it. Now, it's not that we haven't had Prozac cases and antidepressant cases of violence and suicide that have prevailed in court. I just gave you a story of a malpractice suit of suicide where that prevailed in court, and that meant the judge had to allow the testimony. I've been in cases, a number of cases of violence and suicide where judges have approved of my giving that opinion. So it means they found that it had sufficient scientific merit to give the opinion. And cases have been won, a product liability, one in Wyoming that I wasn't involved in, where a man killed himself and several of his family members on an SSRI antidepressant, and the judge said there was sufficient basis for the jury to give that opinion, sufficient scientific basis, but never before have we had a judge come out and say, and this is Dr. Peter Breggin, and I understand that unbeknownst to me, I cut out. My voice went. We don't know exactly what the technological flaw was or whose end it was on, but that it happened at the critical moment. My wife, who was listening in the other room, said, Peter, you were saying that never before in history had a judge, and then my voice cut out. Well, never before in history had a judge come out in an independent decision and determined that an antidepressant had caused violence. As I was saying, and I think that I did get across, that judges have confirmed that there's a scientific basis for juries making that decision, a scientific basis for bringing product liability suits based on antidepressants like Paxil and Prozac and Celexa causing violence and suicide and also psychosis, but that it was a first for the judge to then go one step beyond that and say not only is there a scientific basis, but indeed that's what happened and that this person is no longer going to be a danger to society. Now, the judge did not as yet make a decision about how much of the remaining few years the young man will have to spend in jail. It's considerably less than 4 years because he spent quite a bit of time there already. The judge could either just let him go or the judge could give him some more time. I recommended that he be released and that he have supervision, probably for a number of years, to help him deal with what he's done, to help him recover. And I don't know what the judge will do, but he's clearly a wise judge who's weighed very carefully the issues in the case. His opinion was very detailed, very thorough, comparing point by point my testimony with the point with the testimony of the Canadian psychiatrist, and basically confirming each step of the way my opinion. I'm trying to think of what else about this case in particular might be of interest to you. We will follow it up after November 4th if that date holds up and we get the judge's final sentencing. But as I said, he's made his decision and he made it based on the evidence. One of the things that happened in the trial, in fact, is that I produced a large number of studies of children subjected to these drugs, a number of them controlled studies that show that a large percentage of young people on these drugs, in some studies 50% or more, develop impulsivity, hypomanic symptoms, aggressivity, hostility, emotional disturbances of a variety of kinds, a very high percentage. So it's just, you know, it's really right there in the scientific literature. So one of the issues is, you know, how does this come about? What does the drug do when it disrupts brain function? What are any and all of these newer antidepressants, Effexor and, you know, its latest incarnation and, you know, Prozac and Paxil, and what are all these drugs doing to the brain? Well, we know that they're creating an unstable situation. Eli Lilly in-house research showed before Prozac was put on the market as a drug that would jack up serotonin by blocking its removal, they already knew that wasn't going to really be true because their rat studies showed that the rat brain didn't like having the synapses flooded with serotonin, so the rat brain shut down production of serotonin for a week or 10 days, which may be why we get these disastrous results sometimes right at the start. And then furthermore, it was determined over a period of time that other compensatory mechanisms fought against the Prozac effect. And I describe all of these in my book, Medication Madness, as well as many, many, many cases of violent suicide crime caused by psychiatric drugs across the spectrum, not just the antidepressants. Clinically, in short, we know that there's a very unstable conditions built into the brain by these drugs. Now, if we look at what are the clinical manifestations, that is, how do these people look to us when they're being driven over the edge? Well, they look in a lot of different ways that are somewhat related. Sometimes they look flat out crazy. Sometimes they are in profound psychotic states that seem to have happened in the Silva case that I talked to you about earlier. It did not happen in the case of this young man in Canada, the 16-year-old. I had a couple of cases that I've been involved in over the years where people were driven psychotic. In one case, which I was not involved in as a legal consult, but the person was referred to me for treatment afterward, a relatively young man in his early 30s, as I recall, very sweet guy with a good history and a loving marriage. Was feeling a lot of stress from schoolwork and work, and he was put on Zoloft, and he became so psychotic that he thought his wife was an alien from outer space, that it really wasn't her. She was inhabited, and she was here to destroy humanity, that she was more brilliant than him or anybody else on Earth and was going to destroy humanity. Then he looked in the mirror, and he saw that he was being transformed too, and he was being transformed into somebody who would save humanity from his wife. And he attempted to kill her by driving at high speed into an obstacle on the road and ripping open her seatbelt simultaneously. It was just a horrendous, horrendous scene. She survived, thank God. In fact, afterward, after the accident, in a panic, he picked her up and tried to carry her staggering along the road to get help. He's a man who's gone on to live a very good life. I managed to get him off all psychiatric drugs when I saw him after he was hospitalized. And he was found not guilty by reason of insanity. And they didn't get into the role of the Zoloft, the psychiatric drug. Though it was clear to me that that's what drove him over the edge. And that's why I felt comfortable taking him off his meds gradually. Anybody coming off meds, get good clinical supervision. Let your family and friends know you're coming off medication so they can help supervise you. Come off slowly, as I did in his case. In another case with Zoloft again, which is sertraline, a woman became very psychotic while her psychiatrist raised her Zoloft over the weekend sight unseen, mistaking her distress for a need for greater Zoloft, as often happens, and she murdered her son and almost murdered her daughter. I was a consultant in that case. So these things do happen, just outright psychosis. But sometimes these things are quite different, and what you get is just a compulsion to commit violence that's out of the blue and has nothing else associated with it, just a compulsion to commit violence. And in fact, the earliest studies that alerted us to these this whole range of risks were studies of compulsive suicidality, out-of-the-blue suicidality, compelled by Prozac, and then that went away when Prozac was stopped, and then started again when Prozac was restarted. Clear-cut kind of a little scientific experiment when you when your drug causes something, you stop the drug, it goes away, you start the drug, and it comes back again. One of my cases in medication madness is, again, a 16-year-old, this time a girl, again put on Prozac. She had been overseas. She had gastrointestinal problems. She was upset about them, obviously, couldn't get over them, couldn't get them diagnosed properly to help her with the stress. She was put on Prozac, and in a short period of time developed a compulsion to stick a knife in her mother's back. Sound familiar? To Canada, very, very familiar, very similar to the Canadian, except in Canada we had a whole range of other symptoms associated with Prozac intoxication, but not here. You know, we had agitation, we had anxiety, we had bizarre thinking, outside of just the compulsion to kill. Fortunately, one night, she said to her mother, because she felt on the verge of it, that she was afraid she was going to knife her to death. And then her mother quickly recognized, this is not my daughter. And her daughter felt a great deal of relief telling her. She said, can you wait till the morning? Are you going to be okay now that you've told me? We'll take you to the doc. She took her to the primary care doc, and just like in Canada, the primary care doc said, this is not right, and like in Canada, referred to the psychiatrist. But the psychiatrist in the U.S., and this is way back in the early 90s, recognized the problem and took her off the Prozac. Years later, when I interviewed this woman, she still felt guilty that she had had, and by the way, of course, she didn't kill her mother. Years later, when I interviewed this woman, she just felt dreadfully guilty, even years later, that she had ever had those thoughts toward her mother. And she felt very reassured when I told her that I saw this kind of thing all the time related to antidepressant drugs, including Prozac. She felt some relief from this, which I was glad to provide. So you can imagine the guilt that the young man is going to face when he leaves in Canada, and he leaves. And I think, you know, for that reason, counseling obviously is helpful. Good counseling, not drugs, not psychiatric drugs. Now, as we saw in Canada, let me just recoup. You can recap. So you can get just flat out psychotic reactions from the antidepressants. And you can get compulsive suicidality that seems to stand alone. But you can also get what we saw in Canada, which is the stimulant syndrome. And that's what I wrote about in detail, that the FDA adopted pretty much right out of my publications and right out of the article that was distributed to them, to the committee, the FDA committee by the FDA, that I'd written on this subject. And this stimulant syndrome identified by Health Canada and by the FDA includes within it, like you get with amphetamine, methamphetamine, or cocaine, other stimulant syndromes, you do get violence and you do get agitation. You do get that whole range of behavior that can lead to terrible outcomes. Now, a fourth aspect is related to stimulation. It's called akathisia, A-K-A-T-H-I-S-I-A. And akathisia, it can be caused by the antipsychotic drugs. It can be caused also by the SSRI antidepressants and other stimulating antidepressants. And even the Conservative Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders put out by the American Psychiatric Association will tell you that akathisia induced by either the antipsychotics or the SSRIs, it mentions both in the manual, diagnostic manual, can lead to mental deterioration and suicidality and aggressivity, violent behavior. And then finally, you have this odd phenomena that can occur right along with agitation, anxiety, and psychosis, and that's apathy. It's probably the most common thing that common phenomena these drugs produce long term, in particular, is apathy and indifference. It's one of the main reasons people come to me to come off the drugs. Their spouses realize they're apathetic, or if they're older, their children realize they have even less interest in their children. They stop playing music or doing artwork or socializing. Apathy. And, you know, there's a little bit been written about this in the scientific literature. I've written some about it. And it's as if the apathy cuts out empathy. So you end up with this agitated, angry state, but you no longer care about people in your usual fashion. Lack of empathy. And, of course, Many of you know that I founded an organization recently with my wife Ginger called the Center for the Study of Empathic Therapy Education and Living. Because empathy is at the heart of the good life, it's at the heart of good therapies. And all psychiatric drugs have the capacity to wipe out empathy. Now, I've got about 10 minutes left, so this show is going to just introduce you to the issues surrounding antidepressant-induced violence. Later shows, we're going to take you into issues of stimulants and what they can do to drive people over the edge, the drugs we give our kids, the benzodiazepines like Xanax and Ativan and Klonopin, how they can disinhibit and cause paradoxical reactions. Mood stabilizers, they've got suicide warnings on them now. Drugs like lithium and how they can just totally depress the individual over the years. And the antipsychotic drugs, which, believe it or not, especially with long-term use, can make you psychotic and can cause akathisia, which can make you violent. So the next time you hear about this poor street person or this hapless human being who's been just discharged from the hospital and stopped his medication and lo and behold did something terrible to another human being, remember, it's not because they needed the medication. It may very well be because withdrawal from antipsychotic drugs can produce something called tardive psychosis. So again, remember, don't listen to me and then remove yourself from all your psychiatric drugs. It's got to be done carefully with a lot of thought. Before we end, I want to tell you about, stay focused on, briefly, on the, with our remaining time, on the antidepressants, with the knowledge that I will come back and talk about other drugs on solo shows from time to time. In 1994, I was asked to be the single scientific expert for a whole bunch of combined Prozac suits. It was actually in the 1991 to 1994 period that this evolved. And it was called the multi-district litigation. A judge combined all of these cases against Eli Lilly. There were well over 100 involving violence, suicide, psychosis, madness, mayhem caused by Prozac. And when the first case came up for trial, it was the famous Westbecker case. I described this in the most detail I've ever done in Medication Madness. It was in Louisville, Kentucky. Before I went, as soon as I got there to Louisville, my wife said to me, "Honey, I think this case is fixed." I said, "Ginger, how can you say that?" She said, "Well, have they prepared you? Usually before your legal cases, they come visit you. They talk at length with you about the case. They work with you on your presentation, your testimony. Has that happened?" I said, "No, still hasn't happened." "And you just told me you're in a hotel with none of the lawyers are at the hotel. Don't they usually put you in the same hotel so they can talk to you the night before, the day before, in between, during the trial?" I said, "That's right, I've been isolated." She said, "The case is fixed. The case is fixed." Well, it turned out the case was fixed. The attorney, Joe Smith, that's really his name, Joe Smith, had gone into an agreement at some point, to throw the case, to take money, to be guaranteed a settlement, and to produce a weak case in court so Eli Lilly could win. So I'm sitting, getting ready for the case. I'm sitting in the lawyer's offices, and they're not even briefing me on the case. They're not reviewing anything with me. I actually confront them at a dinner. And I say, "You're not practicing testimony with me, going over anything? There's a major case that's going to have a great impact on the world. What are you doing?" He yells back at me, "Joe Smith, this is my case. I'll run it the way I want." He asks me two questions in front of 10 people. I give him an answer. He says, "See, you don't need any help." It was utterly bizarre. Furthermore, since I've got all this extra time, I'm finding out that there's a huge amount of material that they have gathered that hasn't even been shared with me. not even share with me, including depositions and a summary of these depositions showing that Wes Becker had had a very disturbed childhood, information that I needed as an expert or I'd look foolish on the stand. So I said, I want this chronology to review. I found it the night before. They said they wouldn't give it to me. My own lawyers, supposedly not my lawyers, but the lawyers that have hired me, wouldn't give it to me. So I got it copied right there, and I took it home. I then gave Wes Smith a whole bunch of questions and said, you better ask me some of these questions. These are all the questions in the case. This is the information I have that you haven't asked me about. Well, it was a bizarre day in court. Anyone who looks at the transcript won't know what's going on, because at times I'm actually answering questions that haven't been asked. They're trying to throw the case. I'm trying to win the case. And afterward, they're real mad at me because I've been answering questions that haven't been asked. I've been getting information out that they didn't want out. But I was going to be a responsible expert, although I still hadn't figured out. I still couldn't accept the case was fixed. Now, partly because I just rammed through testimony against the wishes of Joe Smith, the jury was almost hung. It was almost a hung jury. It was just by one vote that it wasn't a hung jury. In Kentucky, you don't need a 100%. And I think it was like a 9-4 vote or a 9-3 vote, and one more vote, and it would have been a hung jury. After the trial, the judge realized what had happened. He figured out that the trial had been fixed. And the Supreme Court of Kentucky said that Eli Lilly had clearly tampered with the judicial system and perhaps even committed fraud. But all of this came out a year or two later, and he refers to the decision. He's changed it from a jury verdict in favor of Eli Lilly to Eli Lilly settling with prejudice. So this tells you why in 1991, in the case of the young 16-year-old girl, a physician might have been more willing to recognize that Prozac could cause violence than later on, after the fixed trial, because the only thing that most lawyers ever heard about was the fake verdict, the manipulated verdict. Almost no one heard about the fixed trial. But I've been telling folks about it, and I'm still talking about it all these years later. Listen, it's not easy being a reformer. It's not easy doing what I do, but it's immensely gratifying. I hope more and more people will be inspired by these two recent cases and decide that they're going to speak truth to power in my field of psychiatry.
Listening to the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour with a new live show every Monday evening at 5 p.m. East Coast time on the Progressive Radio Network, where each show is archived for your convenience. You can learn more about Dr. Bragan and his lifelong reform work on www.bragan.com. That's B-R-E-G-G-I-N.com.